You know, it's always a very good experience coming to the West Coast, especially in the winter time. So I'm very happy. You know, there's a lot of previous talk, you know, covering the Tencent network and the OPEP states. And so here I will try to explain or discuss a similar feature, but from the connect matter point of view. It is a laser pointer. Yeah. So nowadays, this topological study of topological fates and the topological transition since became very active field. You know, in early days, we have a belief that maybe all the fates and the fate transition are described by signature breaking. But however, during study of high TC and the quantum Hall states, we realized that a different quantum Hall states all have the same symmetry. So therefore, there's no way to use a symmetry to describe them. So therefore, this indicates that quantum Hall states or chiral spin states have some new kind of order, which is not related to symmetry breaking, cannot be described by order parameter, and cannot be described by long-range correlation, and et cetera, et cetera. But so the trouble is it's very hard to publish a paper by describing something by what it is not, you know. So it's always a struggle. But on the other hand, it's very common, you know. When you have something, you usually describe things by what you don't know. For example, like spin liquid. People talk about spin liquid all the time, but spin liquid basically means what we don't know. It's not spin order, basically. And so here the key issue is that how to describe the structure or internal structure in quantum Hall state by what it is. And let me very quickly go through some earlier attempts. And you know, the quantum Hall states have energy gap. The standard way to describe a fixed point or phase is using low energy effective theory. But then you immediately say that, oh, quantum Hall states have a gap, then low energy effective theory are trivial, there's nothing. So however, that's not quite true. Even energy gap, but here, here's the difference. Well, here when I say energy gap, I only mean thermodynamic energy gap, which means we could still have degenerate ground states. So even though we have energy gap for quasi particles, but however, ground degeneracy can depend on topology and can be robust. So therefore, the low energy effective theory is not quite trivial because the degeneracy depends on topology of space. So you have this kind of almost trivial field theory to describe that. But turns out this field theory is highly non-trivial. It's called a topological field theory. So therefore, these quantum Hall states or chiral spin states have this feature that it's a low energy effect theory, it's a topological quantum field theory. And actually, that's a motivation for the name topological order. And later realized that the stable degeneracy, which is quantum bits, is very important. So it can be used as a fault-tolerant quantum memory. And but certainly, it's hard to believe that a number can label or can characterize all the possible structure in the quantum Hall states. So you want to get more data. And one way to get more data is to deform the torus. And when you deform the torus, there's a non-abelian barrier phase because we have a degenerate ground state on the torus. So non-abelian barrier phase associated with this deformation of torus would be a matrix, would have more data. And so it turns out this non-abelian barrier phase form a projective representation of a modular group. And there is some belief that such a projective representation may completely classify the topological order. And even on the sphere, we could have degeneracy if you are willing to add quasi particles. So without quasi particle, we only have degeneracy on a torus, but on sphere, we need to add the quasi particles. And then, because if you add the quasi particles, even when you fix position of quasi particle, we could have degeneracy, just like protective degeneracy. So in that case, we also have a qubit. The moving quasi particle around can manipulate this qubit, so that's really led to this fault-tolerant topological quantum computation. And So another thing which is useful is to probe the system at the edge. You know, and in the bulk, it have a gap. Looks like nothing. You know, it have a gap. All the correlation functions are short range, so you hardly see anything in the bulk. So actually, that's my picture of a quantum Hall liquid. It's quantum Hall liquid. Liquid is a liquid, means have nothing in there. But however, if you study its edge, it's like a cutting onion. You see all the layers. So in 1D, in a 2D bulk, we have 1D boundary conformal field theory. Actually, in the 4D gap states, we could have 3D boundary, chiral fermions, and et cetera. So they also believe that the edge structure fully characterizes the bulk topology order, which sounds very much like the holographic principle in quantum gravity. So certainly there's a very suggestive whether quantum gravity is really topological. But however, here mainly I'll try to present a more modern point of view what really is topological order. And so this more modern point of view is a strongly it's related to the entanglement entropy. And for gap system, it turns out that the entanglement entropy can have this universal term. You know, there's an error law term for gap system, but also the constant term turns out to be universal. And so therefore, this universal constant term reflect that the entanglement in some gap system can have some long range in nature. You know, the difficulty here we are facing is that for those gap system, all the correlation function of a local operator are short-ranged. So we seem to don't have anything. And how to probe, but at the same time also know there's some language in nature in the states, which cannot be probed by local operator. And so the entanglement entropy will be one way to do that. Actually, there's several other way. So therefore, this result from entanglement really suggests that the topology order is closely related to so-called some long range in nature of quantum entanglement in the states. So that's really the direction I'm trying to go in here. And so now let's try to say, what exactly do you mean by long range entanglement? Again, that's a new term, you know, it's not without definition. But you know, as a physicist, probably that's a kind of common, pretty common. You're talking about a lot of a term which nobody knows what that means. But actually, the physicist's job is really trying to make those term have a more precise definition. Okay, then to understand what really is a long range entanglement, we need to have a discussion of a quantum phase. So most generally, the quantum phase actually is defined through phase transition. We cannot define quantum phase itself, but we can define phase transition. So we have to say, what is phase transition? And then the phase transition, at least in quantum sense, can be defined by considering a family of Hamiltonian depending on some coupling constant. Then if you change the coupling constant, we study the Gwangsi density in the thermodynamic. We ask if Gwangsi energy density have a singularity or not as a function of a coupling constant. Or more generally, we can consider average of any other local operator and ask, do we have a singularity? So whenever the average local operator have a singularity, then we say, okay, that's a phase transition line. And then the phase is defined as a region separated by the phase transition line. So that's kind of a general definition for phase and phase transition. And certainly, there's a puzzle here that Hamiltonian is always a smooth function for G. How can the average of a local operator can be singular? And then there's one mechanism to develop singularity, develop singularity despite we have a smooth Hamiltonian, which is signature breaking. And in the signature breaking, we try to, although the Hamiltonian or energy curve is a smooth function of a parameter, But the minimization process, by finding the minimal, and this symmetry breaking associated with the finding minimal, led to the singularity in the ground state. And so this is really led to this symmetry breaking theory for the phase transition. But however, certainly symmetry breaking is not everything. So there's a more general mechanism to cause a singularity in the local average, which is a closing energy gap for gap states. You know, if a state have a gap, then closing energy gap can be viewed as a more general mechanism to cause singularity. So therefore, so in this case, we can just we can say all the phase boundary are really gapless phase boundary, and so therefore the so the region separated by gapless phase boundary will be the phase. So using this picture again, this picture is not really proof or anything, but if you believe this. Actually, believing that is a little non-trivial belief, because things like that, if energy gap don't close, the ground system cannot have a singularity. This is not allowed, and this is also not allowed. And the two ways allowed is like this and this. This is like a level crossing, which is a first order transition. This really is continuous transition. But if you believe in this picture, then immediately we see that the equivalence class of a quantum phase actually is a region for the gap phase. Actually, it's a region which is the gap do not close. If a two state can deform into each other without closing energy gap, then the two state was said to be in the same phase. So this is a kind of a pretty reasonable picture. So mathematically, the two state can be connected without closing energy gap means that we can have a pseudo Hamiltonian and generate adiabatic evolution to evolve one state to another state. It turns out that this is an if-only-if condition. In a sense, if two states are connected without closing energy gap, then we can find the Hamiltonian which adiabatically evolve one state to another state. So that's a one statement. Another statement is that if you know two states, Psi 0, Psi 1, have energy gap for two Hamiltonian H1, H2. And then you also know that these two states, Psi 0, Psi 1, are connected by this adiabatic evolution. Then we can construct the Hamiltonian which connect H0 and H1 such that along this path, the gap never close. So this is really the if and only condition. So therefore, this adiabatic connectivity by a local Hamiltonian for gapped states can be used as a mathematical definition of two states being in the same phase.
Sure.
Yes.
I assume that you're thinking of moving in sort of a modulized space of Hamiltonians in that square.
Yeah.
Rather than having a fixed physical system and moving across an edge between two regions.
Yeah. So we are moving in the modulized. So this G parameterizes different family of Hamiltonian. So Hamiltonian are changing. The coupling constant changing.
Right, but it looks like the pictures you have red X's through would correspond more to moving spatially in a region.
Oh no, this is G horizontal axis is a parameter of Hamiltonian.
It looks like sort of a gapless edge mode that you've diagrammed here.
Oh no, this is not gapless edge mode. It's just a spectrum. For each vertical line is a spectrum of a particular system.
Oh.
Yeah. So this G is just coupling constant space.
Can you explain why you
have red X's
through some of those?
Oh, okay, so like this. On this part, we have a degenerate ground state. And then there's a gap to the quasi particle. Continuum. And this region is the quasi particle continuum energy gap collapse. And then here we have no degenerate ground state. So this may be a picture of a phase transition from a trivial phase to a blood ordered phase. And this is a level crossing, that's a first order phase transition. We're changing the parameter. Okay. So actually, this is one of the main points, which is a kind of common knowledge in physics. Just adiabatic continuation for gap state means the same phase. And however, in quantum information, we can rewrite this adiabatic evolution operator as a local unitary transformation. Means we perform unit transformation on the patch of a system. And we can have the overlapping patch and have a layer of overlapping patch, and etc. But this combination of this local unit transformation also called the quantum circuit. So therefore, we can always approximate this adiabatic evolution of this harmonic local operator as this quantum circuit. And here we really review one very crucial factor. We should have a finite number of layers. That's called the quantum circuit finite depth. And here, the adiabatic evolution should be like a finite time evolution. And this is very important. if you do not have this condition, we can evolve any state to any other states. However, if we restrict our time evolution to be finite time or finite layer, in the limit of some limit, I mean the time and the layer depths do not depend on size of system. And if you have that condition, then this adiabatic connectivity would have different classes. So then that's really defined a non-trivial phase. So the finite depths is very, very important. So then it became the, so then I can say that this adiabatic evolution became an equivalence and a quantum circuit. If the two states are connected by quantum circuit of finite depths, then they are in the same phase. Yes?
Yeah, there are two limits,
thermodynamic
limit and the spiral. So do they commute? Or
they don't commute.
What is the correct
way
to,
what
is the correct order?
First, we are
taking depth.
No, depth is finite. So basically, okay. To be really precise, you need to specify local errors. Because the two states are not really the same. You specify some local errors. Then you say that in a thermodynamic limit, you know, you then have a quantum circuit of finite depths, and you can take system cycle to infinity. Then you say that if when the depth is large enough, you can two states would match within the local error. That would be a more precise way to define this. Actually, this became quite non-trivial. So I don't know whether any statement here is a really rigorous or correct or not. Therefore, it's clear that the quantum circuit which has a combination of local unit transformation. This really an equivalence relation. And when we define the quantum phase, it's also equivalence relation. You know, two states in the same phase means that they are equivalence. There is equivalence called a universality class. So what we here, we try to say that the equivalence relation under the quantum circuit and the equivalence class for the quantum phase are really the same thing. So that's really became a mathematical definition of a quantum phase. But here I want to stress that the definition here really for gap states. You know, we certainly know that for gap state, there's also universality class. But now you can see that if you don't have an energy gap, this argument don't quite go through so easily. So I kind of wonder, you know, for gap state, how one define the phase in a more rigorous sense. There's some difficulty here. Okay. So using this picture of this local unit transformation to define quantum phase, then we find there can be two kinds of states if you don't consider any symmetry. First kind of state is very simple. That is the state which can be mapped into the product states. So this state really means that it's controlling the so-called local entanglement. And then by using local unit transformation, you can map the state back to the product states. It turns out that all the product states can be mapped into each other by this local unit transformation. So all those states belong to the same class, so they're in the same phase. So there's only one class of phase which have a shorter entanglement. Shorter entanglement means that it can be mapped into local, into product states via finite depths of quantum circuit. So that is a definition of shorter entanglement. And there's only one such state. And such state we call have a trivial topological order. Then there are the second kind of states are states which cannot be mapped to the product states. And those states have a different class. So that means we can have two states. Both cannot be mapped into product state, but also at the same time, they cannot map into each other via this finite depth quantum circuit. So we have many class of long-range entanglement. And so this many class of long-range entanglement, actually, you can view as a mathematical definition of topological order. So I think this is the topological order really is a part of entanglement which cannot be filtered out by local unit transformation. So that's maybe a more general and a better way to think what it really is a topological order.
Yes. Is the equivalence of all product states independent of the sort of the nature of the local Hilbert space? If I have a spin one product state and a spin two product state,
That's as long as I have local Hilbert space, that's fine. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay.
So this trivial state, which can be connected to the product state, what state is that, and how does it entangle? Spectrum look like? So
the trivial state entanglement certainly will have a gap.
Okay.
in time span have a gap, and there's top launch equal to zero.
Can you go back to the two things?
Yeah.
What do you mean by saying states are less
symmetrical? I'm sorry. So when I say no signature, I really don't mean states. I mean, when we consider a quantum phase, we have to specify Hamiltonian class. So when you say whether two states are in the same phase or not, we have to specify Hamiltonian class so that within this class Hamiltonian, can we deform one state to another state smoothly or not. So therefore, the concept of phase and phase diagram is not just a property of a state, it's a property of a Hamiltonian class. So when we say no symmetry, I really mean that we specify Hamiltonian class without any symmetry consideration. So that means when we consider whether two states are the same phase or not, we are allowed to deform, we allow the Hamiltonian deformation via any path as long as it's local. We do require it's local, but we don't require any symmetry.
But there's a problem with that answer, at least in terms of the Chirac's lecture, because he told us how to make the Hamiltonian from the state if the state was gap, but you're talking about gapless states now.
Yes.
Or states with long range correlators, I assume. So how do you construct the Hamiltonian to study from the state?
Okay, this is the important detail. Suppose that what do you mean by, here we study so-called gap states. What do you mean by gap state? Gap state means we have a wave function and we have a local Hamiltonian such that this wave function is a gapped ground state. As long as you find one Hamiltonian to make wave function gapped, then we say it's gap states. And when we say whether two gap states can be connected or not, we say if we can find one family of Hamiltonian connecting these two states without collision gap, then we say they can be connected, they belong to the same phase. Certainly it's maybe possible, even for the gap states, you can find a Hamiltonian which make it gapless. But here we don't worry about that. We say generically, in the Hamiltonian which make gap state gapped will be generically gapped.
Don't you want to also classify gapless states of the deformation in some sense?
Yeah, this is much, much harder. In a sense, when you have designed the Hamiltonian to make something gapless, that's you may not have good theory. Only the gapless states, which are robust against any perturbation of the Hamiltonian, may have very good properties. But those became very hard to study. Yeah. Yeah, usually have some symmetries. Yeah. And but when you design the Hamiltonian which have gapless states, then this then one may not have a good property. That's all. So I'm going to add this question. So now we can discuss symmetry breaking. We can include symmetry more naturally. So we just study Hamiltonian system with no symmetry. And then we only have a long range or short entanglement or topology order. But however, if we consider Hamiltonian with symmetry, means our Hamiltonian class have certain symmetries, then we ask whether a state can be deformed between each other within this Hamiltonian class. So then we have to reintroduce our equivalence relation. This adiabatic pseudo Hamiltonian evolution operator should have the same symmetry as our Hamiltonian class. Okay. So therefore, this equivalence relation is more restricted. So each equivalent class are smaller, and you have more class. So this is a kind of picture. If we consider Hamiltonian class with no symmetry, we don't have one short-range entangled states, and many long-range entangled states. However, if you consider Hamiltonian class with symmetry, then we have a smaller class, and there's more class. So even for the state with a short entangled state within this sense, we could have many class. One of them are literally symmetry breaking states. You know, symmetry breaking states are all kind of, they are product states, so they belong to this. But what is interesting is that even two states with the same symmetry and with a short entanglement can belong to a different class within this kind of equivalence relation. So this is a little bit surprising. That is, for short entangled states, without symmetry breaking, they can be in different phase. Actually, the example are very well known. The Hodang phase, and the S equals 0 phase have same symmetry if you break spiral symmetry slightly, say to XXZ chain. And these two states have same symmetry, both are gapped, and they are different. Okay. And another, now maybe more well-known example is the distinguishment between the spanning insulator and topological insulator. You know, here they are protected by time reversal symmetry. If you don't have time reversal symmetry, there's only one class. But however, if you have time reversal symmetry, then there's a two or maybe more class. So this is what we call this symmetry protected topological order. But actually, I should really call those examples a symmetry protected trivial order, because they have a shorter entanglement. And here should be symmetry protected topological order, because we don't study here. That's fine, but later when we study this, we are run out of names, you know. And the reason is that we call symmetry protected topological order because Hodan phase was a standard example of a topological ordered phase. Called a trivial phase doesn't look so good. So this is really some kind of general example, a kind of general picture of what is a topological order. So looking back is a little bit embarrassing because in kinematic physics we study all kind of quantum phenomena like a superfluid, a superconductor. But from RF to quantum information, those are so-called quantum states are really classical states because they are really dual product states. And so only quantum Hall states are genuinely quantum states. So in a sense, we kind of enter into the era of study really quantum states. You know, a lot of previous states, you know, it's kind of quantum, but really they are not do not have such entanglement. So you can understand them classically. And also, our theory is that because the mean field theory can be viewed as some kind of classical field theory, and we can understand the superfluidity very well just using classical field theory.
What about topological
superconductor? Topological superconductor is a.
Is a wave function measuring from
yes.
Quantum Hall states, but at the same time.
Oh yeah. These are the integer quantum Hall states, like for example, which is non-trivial. Yeah. 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 Those are genuine quantum. I try to say. Yeah. Yeah. The other parameter actually say is non quantum. You know, state is called other parameter. It's other parameter aspect is non quantum. In a sense.
I think the question was about px plus ipy superconductors. Where are they?
No, the PS plus IPY superconductor is non-trivial not because superconductor is non-trivial because of weak small gap. There's a strong coupling limit, a weak coupling limit. The strong coupling limit is classical. The weak coupling limit is really entangled. And but the distinction between two limits is not because of superconductivity. It's because because it's some Langley entanglement. It's something more in the wave function. Make this a strong coupling, weak coupling is very different. Okay, so what you can do with this picture that's relating the phase matter and with a long range entanglement. One thing we can try to do is try to label or classify the topological order. Because if you understand the topological order is just a pattern of Langley entanglement, probably can find a way to see the entanglement and find a way to label them. So certainly one way to label topological order, if you just think about the labeling without thinking about understanding, is that we can use the wave function itself. You know, we have many about the wave function containing all the information, certainly containing information with topological order, so we can use that. But certainly this is not so good because this is a there's a very we have to be patient, I think this some cache memory or some
it's not trivial.
Yeah, you can see It does, let's see. Okay. So now this is a window, not the Linux. Okay. This,
you didn't want to tell us about this slide.
Yes. Yeah, very short. Let me just keep talking. So certainly one way is to use this wave function to label states, and that certainly is not good because it's many to one. So, but now we know that's what's wrong with the wave function, because wave function contain a lot of shortening entanglement, and that's why it's many to one labeling. So therefore, we need to using local union transformation to remove all the shortening entanglement. Then that's really this wave function normalization we heard from the last talk, yeah, the zone in and the zone out. So using the wave function normalization, we can filter out the short range entanglement, and then in a fixed point, then hopefully we have a simple fixed point wave function, and then we can using the simple fixed point wave function to label different states. So that's basically the idea. And so therefore, the understanding that the relation between entanglement and the quantum phase is really as the filtering process should be done using the local unitary transformation. So that's a lesson we learned from this general discussion. So the rest is a math, you know, how to really perform this local unitary transformation, and how to filter out all the local thing and keep the long range pattern intact. So that's kind of mathematics, and so that's a kind of idea, you know, the wave function normalized to fixed point, and then we're using this ideal fixed point wave function to label states. So then the issue that's what kind of data should you use to label the fixed point wave function? That became the data which label the topological order. So I will not discuss this, but just want to present the result. It turns out that for bosonic system in two dimension, not most general, but at least for a large class of them, can be labeled by the collection of tensors. And certainly not every tensor describe a state. Only tensors satisfy those horrible nonlinear algebraic equation satisfy can correspond to a fixed point wave function. And this nonlinear algebraic equation actually is something appear in the tensor category theory, and this is a famous Pandigan identity here, and this may be most important relation. So therefore this so this kind of mathematical structure seems very natural to classify 2D states. And recently we find that even the fermionic states can be understood in this way. I want to emphasize that the fermion and the boson are very, very different beasts. Because in the boson case, when we study the equivalence relation, this Hamiltonian is a local Hamiltonian, it's a local operator. But when you have a fermionic system, you can define similar equivalence relation. But however, here, this Hamiltonian can be Hamiltonian with even number of fermion operator. And the Hamiltonian with even number of fermion operator are non-local operator in higher dimension. So basically, in the fermion case, we really modify our definition of equivalence relation. We're using non-local Hamiltonian to define equivalence relation. But in general, when you say a non-local Hamiltonian to define the equivalence relation, maybe you don't get anything. But however, here you have a very formal constraint. This non-local Hamiltonian have a property that it contains only even number fermion operator, and the fermion operator are close. I don't know how to express such a statement in a very physical way. So I had to do the formal way. I had to introduce the Fermi operator. We had this one, I have an even number Fermi operator, Fermi operator close by, using that formal way to define this. But if you're using this notion to define the so-called local fermionic Hamiltonian, then this new equivalence class by this defined by this non-local operator would correspond so-called fermionic topological order.
Understood that last thing you were saying. I mean, if we have two fermionic systems,
yeah,
and we can tune the Hamiltonian to go from one to the other without closing the gap,
yeah,
then we can do this evolution with a Hamiltonian that is completely local, but just has to be expressed in terms of fermionic operators.
That's right.
Yeah.
But however, this Hamiltonian operator, which defines a local, this adiabatic evolution,
right,
cannot be written as a local bosonic operator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Because in my previous definition, I want to emphasize that this Hamiltonian generated adiabatic evolution is local, but local in the bosonic sense. So and that's related to the topological in boson system. But if you define something local in fermionic sense, you define different class. And that class is what you call the fermionic topological order. That's what I try to say. Yes?
You have several words, papers, where you explore how to study from, say, bosonic degrees of freedom. You get immersion degrees of freedom, which are fermionic.
That's right.
Fermionic.
Yes.
So isn't that a contradiction then?
Not contradiction. It's really, if you believe everything is bosonic, which I myself want to believe,
right,
that,
right,
then I don't need to study fermionic topological order.
Right,
many of my colleagues believe fermions are fundamental.
But if you,
so I believe fermions are fundamental, then I need to define a theory for fermion. Then that's correspond to the equivalence class defined via this non-local bosonic operator.
But my question is, if you obtain a class here which is different from the ones that you obtain starting from bosons,
that's right.
Doesn't this prove that your colleagues are right?
I don't know. Actually, I'm talking about, they really try to emphasize that the so-called fermionic topological order actually is truly non-local thing. And then it became philosophy, whether do you believe locality or non-locality, and I don't know, yeah. And okay, since you raised the question, so how to compare this fermion topological order from this emerging fermion point of view? When you have emerging fermion, you always have a bosonic system, you have fermionic quasi-particle. Then the fermionic topological order really study the topological order of this fermionic quasi-particle, ignoring the underlying bosonic system. So that means when you calculate entangled entropy, you don't cut all the way. You only cut through the fermionic quasi-particle. You don't cut the underlying boson system. You know, entangled entropy really relating cutting system to half. And what do you mean by cutting all the way is very, very tricky. So when you study fermionic topological order, we don't cut all the way from the emerging point of view. If you cut all the way, you always have bosonic one. Yeah. So, but the only thing I'm trying to say is that the fermionic topological order have similar structure from bosonic one, except the panic identity now requires some phase, you know. Some index are fermionic, some index are bosonic. Then depending on the index of fermionic bosonic, there's a minus sign appear. And this seems provide a framework to study the fermionic topological order. And that's maybe some called, I don't know whether there's name called super tensor category. It's about this structure. But now let's do something simpler. So in the remaining time, I'll try to concentrate on the 1D topological order. It turns out that really build on the results of those people here. Actually, we can have a pretty a complete understanding of 1D topological order. And for 1D topological order, we are like concerned the phase of a gap system. So we really think about the gap system. Then there's a proof that the gap and the short range are the same thing in one dimension at least. And so therefore, instead of thinking about the gap system, we just need to study so-called state with short range correlation. Short range correlation really means all the local operators have a short range correlation. Okay, so those are called short range correlated states. And then again, you know, based on this, a Schrodinger coordinate state can always be represented as a tensor matrix product state. So therefore, we can just study matrix product states. Okay, so that makes things much easier. So then again, based on result here, again, this is very, very important. That is the matrix product states. If you try to do this local unit transformation, all the matrix product states can become dimer states. Means this segment of a matrix after local unit transformation can be transformed into this form. That means we have a rank 3 tensor, but rank 3 tensor is composed of two rank 2 tensors. So there's one matrix here, another matrix here. So that's a very, very, therefore, to understand the quantum phase in one dimension with finite energy gap, we just need to study the dimer states. And that makes things very easy. And so let me try to, you know, let me try to explain result of this paper just from some maybe a little bit more physical point of view.
Can I make one comment?
Yeah,
this is a little bit off topic, but
yeah.
Since you say any short range correlate can be represented as MPS,
yeah.
This actually isn't true, but you can prove another way that the 1D is MPS, but this actually isn't true. There are 1D short range correlated that are not MPS.
Really?
Or not with bounded bond dimension.
With random?
The construction uses some randomness in one way to do it, but it's you can make it a translation invariant state, short range correlated.
Which cannot be represented by MPS.
Well, the bond dimension of the MPS is not related in any nice way to the correlation link.
Okay, but it does have finite bond dimension?
As big as you'd like.
But whether, do you have example of finite bond dimension? Let me see. I see. You say there exists a Schrodinger correlated states, which has shown cannot be represented by matrix product states.
Yeah.
That would be.
Yeah. I know. That's what I'm saying. You can prove it another way. That there's a longer proof that the 1D ones have MPS.
Okay.
So everything you say is fine. But if
okay. So. Yeah, maybe I should make a disclaimer. I make a no rigor statement in my talk. They're all more or less okay.
I mean, everything you're going to use is true, but
yeah.
Just the way you got there is not quite true.
Yeah. Morally, yes. Really, we are dealing with this similar limit, you know, the different limit of things that became very tricky and really beyond myself. And so here's my just intuitive understanding. You know, really, what we hear in the last talk about this positive map. That's really a mathematical framework for that. But very simply, it's just we just consider this state with its inner product. So which is represented by this graph. So this is state, and this is a complex conjugate of state. Then we contract all the physical index. And then when you look at this, it's like a ladder and like transfer matrix. So therefore, we can view each part as a transfer matrix. So combine alpha A as a one index, B beta as another index, we get a matrix. We multiply many, many matrices together, we know that the largest eigenvalue dominates. So we only need to worry about the single largest eigenvalue. When you have a single largest eigenvalue, then this can be written as a, you know, this here really has sum over all eigenvalue here, but only one dominates, so we just pick one, then whole structure became this. Then this kind of thing can be expressed as a contraction of some kind of matrix product state. And from here you can see that how dimer structure appears. Why things simplified? Really because we have a transfer matrix of very long ladder and a single large eigenvalue dominate. So that's kind of a naive, simple way to understand this structure. So therefore, if you do this local unit transformation, we can convert the states into this dimer form. But in dimer form, we see that if you look at each dimer like this, they are product states. This is one state, they are product with another state, and et cetera. So basically, that really says that that's really the result.
I have a question. Where
that's the result of this paper.
Where does AKLT fit into that?
What's AKL? Yeah, AKL. T, what else say?
AKLT.
Yeah, AKLT states is a product state. Yeah, that's what I say. AKLT is a product state. Although that's a canonical example of topological states, but it's product states. It's a, so that's why it's a topological product trivial, signature product trivial states. And so actually that's really the result I think of this paper, that all the 1D gap states are product states. So in a sense, there's no topological order in one dimension. Yeah, that really this. And so since the 1D is a trivial. But however, if we have a symmetry, then things become non-trivial. So we may have, if you have a symmetry, maybe you have a more phase. So that's really the picture here. So in one dimension, we don't have a long-ring entanglement. So nothing here. But however, without symmetry, we don't have one phase. With symmetry, then we may have a more phase. Certainly we have symmetry breaking phase. But we also have a phase which do not break symmetry, but belong to different phase. So we'll try to say, can we classify this part? That the 1D phase with energy gap do not break any symmetry, how many of them? How to label all of them? So that's became a question. Yes?
Just a comment about the connectivity on the left side there when there's no symmetry.
Yeah.
It's a recent result of Gitaeus that space has pi 3. So in other words, you're just talking about connecting individual points.
Yes.
But the parameter space for those chains without symmetry, that chain without symmetry, has an element of third homotopy, even though it doesn't have an element of pi.
Oh, I see. For any 1D interacting system, or
the totality of 1D chains, gap chains,
I see.
The space for Hamiltonians describing 1D gap.
Have non-zero pi 3. That's wonderful results.
It's not a contractible space. It's not
I see.
Topology.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because then you can think about building this 1D chain around some, then you can try to build this pi 3. But maybe you need a 4 dimension.
Well, if you
okay. So now let's concentrate on quantum phase with a symmetry. And here we say we have translation and unsigned symmetry. Again, you can see, really working on this, I really feel like standing shoulder of giants. So we have this result, very nice result, that when you have translation in one of the Schrodinger correlated states, it can all be represented by a uniform MPS. This is pretty non-trivial because MPS and the physical wave function is not one-to-one. So it's possible that some translation invariant wave function must use non-translation invariant MPS to represent that. I know this happens in higher dimension. In two dimension, this happens. But not in one dimension for some reason. So in one dimension, a uniform MPS will be fine. And then within this uniform MPS, then we can always deform this MPS into this dimer MPS. The rough figure again is here. You know, when you have this ladder, I say that there's one eigenvalue dominates, other eigenvalue do not dominate, they are small. But we can simply not take think of the long ladder. Even for short ladder, we can just by hand turn those small eigenvalue to zero. And such process is allowed process. And so using this, basically, you can deform with translation, you can deform a state into this again, this dimer form. Okay, and then we can and this deformation, one can show that this deformation for eigenvalue really commute with a symmetry. So this dimer form should also have a symmetry. In a sense, we can have a, so symmetry really means the matrix is invariant and a symmetry operation. That is, we can do a physical symmetry operation on the physical index and followed by some kind of unitary transformation on the internal index. And then the matrix should be invariant up to the phase. And this phase forms 1D representation of this group G. So this really So this really the condition, the matrix must satisfy in order to represent a symmetry non-breaking states. So basically, the mathematics, we can just study this equation to see what kind of a matrix structure we can have. And the important feature is that because M and M inverse always appear together, so M can be a projective representation. Okay. So from here, we can see that the result is that the all the different quantum phase which have this symmetry, the unsigned symmetry represented by G and the translucent symmetry, can be labeled or classified by a pair. One is this linear representation of the group and the class of a projective representation of the group. So that's basically the results. But let me explain these results a little bit in more detail. So first is that because this matrix here is very simple, one can show that this physical representation must separate, can always be represented as a two representation act on the individual index. Here we have this splitting. You know, this side used to have a one physical index. Now we say that after this RG, the standard form have a double index, and then there's another physical symmetry operation really separates which act on individually on this double index, and then obviously this kind of operation do not change the tensor. Okay, but the key is that suppose let's consider we have a two fixed point tensor, where they are invariant under in a different way. So the first tensor, the transformation here is factorized into M, M being one of a projective representation, and N for another chain, the fixed point tensor we have is a we have this kind of factorization. We get a different projective representation N. So then the question that can we deform this state to this state continuously without breaking symmetry? The answer naively yes, because here we have a product state, we have a dimer here. This dimer is singlet. And here we have also dimer, that's also singlet. We can just make a local transformation, rotate this dimer into this dimer, both are singlet. Then we can do the rotation without breaking symmetry. And so it seems we can rotate that naively. But however, we cannot. The reason is that during the process of rotation, we encounter on this side, we encounter state with N and M. You know, here on each side, we have N minus one, N inverse. Here I have M, M inverse. This combination is very important because these two states are dual product. Although M is a projective representation, this dual product is still linear representation. But however, if you try to rotate this singlet to this singlet, during the process, in the halfway of rotation, we encounter on this physical side, we encounter mixing between N and M. That's fine, just mixing two representation is still a representation, but not in this case. Because N and M belong to different projective representation. When you mix, when you have a direct sum of a two projective representation, you don't get any representation, it's no longer anything. So that's not allowed, so that's it. So that's basically the way to understand why we have this why different projective representation correspond to different phase, and so maybe just we can just all this. So this may be a more formally the statement is that for 1D system with only translation and unsigned symmetry, which is the symmetry is realized linearly. Then all the phase of gap states that do not break the symmetry are labeled by linear representation and the projective representation. So these two beta just label all the states. One example is that say when you have SO3 symmetry, then this SO3 have a two projective representation and have no 1D representation. So therefore SO3 linear rotation environment system have only two phase. Two and only two phase. And but however, I want to emphasize that when I say SO3 spin rotation system, I mean integer spin system, because here I require the group act linearly. So only integer spin SO3 representation. So integer spin system have a two and only two phase. But how about SU2? For SU2, we have no projection representation and no 1D representation. So therefore, SU2 environment and the translation system have only one phase. And that sounds strange. But however, when I say SU2, I really mean that we allow integer and half integer mix. Because if a physical state have a mixture of integer, half integer, they still can be SU2 symmetry. If you do allow the mixing of that, then this SU2 system really have only one phase, no other phase. And so certainly this projection notation are closely related to the boundary spin, which is very famous in the Hodan phase. But here is more general. You know, if you have a symmetry by a certain group, the U is a linear notation, then we may have a different phase classified by projection notation. And those different phase actually have a different boundary states, which in this different projection notation. So actually this can be measured. So if you have some group symmetry, you just measure the boundary states. If the boundary state belongs to certain project representation, then you'll say, yeah, your chain are in that phase. So these boundary states and the classification of phase have this direct relation. And those statements also have a consequence for gapless states, and we can have a generalization of a Lipschitz matrix theorem. Because we can show that for 1D system with the translation and unsigned symmetry, if unsigned symmetry is realized non-projectively, realized projectively, then the system must be gapless, or it must break some symmetry. If you don't break any symmetry, it must be gapless. The reason following is if you have a translation symmetry, again, same thing. Here you can see the symmetry are realized projectively. So gamma is non-trivial projection notation. Then again, if you assume this state have a gap, then again it have a matrix product representation. It have this standard fixed point form. Then from here we notice that omega phi, omega four, when they combine together, should give us a non-trivial projection notation. That means omega phi, omega four, cannot be belong to same projection notation. They only differ by this one. So therefore, if you cut here, you have one project representation. If you cut here, you have different project representation. That means break translation symmetry. So basically, that if you force a state with a project representation, symmetry realized projectively, to have a gap, then the boundary states will be in different project representation if you cut chain in different place. And this sounds obvious, you know. So therefore, if you don't break translation symmetry, then has to be gapless. And so this is the one way to generalize Lipschitz matrix theorem to any group, not just SO3, is any even discrete group. And then there's another statement also related to the gaplessness. You know, when we have here we consider a state which do not have any symmetry breaking, have a full symmetry. That means if you do the symmetry transformation on the whole state should form a linear 1D representation of the symmetry group at the whole many body states. Then there's a statement that this 1D representation on the whole state of system of size L can separate into a 1D representation on each side. So this A alpha L is a 1D representation for the whole system, can separate into the power of a 1D representation on each side raised to L's power. And if the state have a translation symmetry and have an energy gap, then the 1D representation must have this property. Again, if you don't have this property, that means the system are gapless. And this, I think, is discussed by Hastings as another way to prove Lipschitz matrix theorem. And a physical example of this situation is really just a boson. The boson have this number conservation, which is U1 symmetry. If we have a non-integer boson per site, then the system cannot be gapped if it do not break any symmetry. So if a symmetric state with a non-integer boson per se must be gapless. And to get a gap, you have to break certain symmetry, either translation symmetry and things like that. And so therefore, in general, from this point of view, at least in 1D, there's a two general mechanism to have gapless states. Okay, I think that's basically, maybe let's skip. You know, there's some very simple generalization to higher dimension, but we don't really have a very complete result. And so the point, the main message here is that the topology order actually is really a part of Langevin entanglement. And the Langevin entanglement is what is very natural when you define quantum phase. Because when you define quantum phase, we're using adiabatic evolution. And that's naturally related to Langevin entanglement. So therefore, the study of Langevin entanglement and the quantum circuit actually is a very natural way to study the quantum phase and quantum phase transition. And I just want to show this. This Langevin entanglement is a very, very rich field. You know, we have this relational ADF-CIP and the tensor category theory and et cetera, you know. And so maybe this is a rich world of real quantum physics. Yeah, thank you.
So you had a slide a little bit back saying that for the SU2, when you mix integer and half integer,
yes.
So the example of this then is like, I just want to make sure I understand, this is like a 1D chain, for example.
Yes.
And initially you started with spin a half on each side, and then you say, now we think of it as a Hubbard model with large U, so that you can move into the space with sort of W.
No, not quite, not Hubbard model, because that's your formula. So here, what I really try to say is that to define quantum phase, that's the one thing I didn't emphasize. To define quantum phase, you should allow to add new states.
Yes.
So that means in the SU2 example, which means you can start with spin 1/2 chain. Then you're allowed to add a new state of spin 1. At the beginning, maybe there's no weight in the spin 1 in the ground state. Then later, you may start to mix in with the spin 1 and try to do deformation. Maybe at the end, you go back to spin 1/2 state. But in the middle, you could mix with spin 1. So if you do this kind of deformation with a mixture of spin 1/2 and spin 1 as a direct sum, you are really discuss the symmetry class of SU2. And if you do this kind of thing, there's no only one phase. So actually this bothered us for a long time, because we always say spin chain have SU2 symmetry. So we should be more rigorous. Spin chain have SO3 symmetry, not SU2 symmetry. And then that should be right way to look at it. Yeah.
Extending Hamiltonian to allow transition from spin 1/2 to spin 1 or something like that?
No, you Hilbert space on the side contain a sector of spin 1/2, another direct sum of spin 1, and etc. Then the Hamiltonian just interact with those degree freedom in the SU2 invariant way.
Right.
And if you're setting things up in this fashion, then there's only one phase. Yeah. Among this class Hamiltonian, there's only one phase. Yeah, that's very, very important.
More questions and comments?
How do you reconcile string order and spin chains within your language?
I don't know. And I don't know. I don't know whether spin order add too much here. The reason is that the string order seems to require certain spin rotation symmetry. If you only have a, say, parity symmetry, I didn't discuss. Actually, Houdin chain and the trivial phase are separate if you have a parity only. And for Hamiltonian system with only parity symmetry, we cannot define string order. So therefore, even in that case, the Houdin phase and the trivial phase are separate with parity, protected by parity, but we cannot understand such separation using string order. But when you have a certain kind of spin rotation symmetry, then you can use string order to understand the difference. So in one dimension, actually this is a, you know, people ask me, what is a topological in one dimension? You know, several years ago I say, I don't know what's a one dimension topology, because the string is not very natural in one dimension. In higher dimension, string is very natural, but in one dimension it's very different. Yeah.
It's a related question. So
you pointed out also, and also we discussed that if you just squeeze out parity and break the other symmetry, then each state is also lost.
Yeah, you lost edge states.
But in your talk today, you kind of derived the edge state from the general principle.
No, not quite.
Okay, so
you know, very good. This result is for the unsaid symmetry G.
Okay.
For the parity, it's a similar argument, but different. The argument is similar enough, you still have a dimer state, you can still see different phase, but different enough, you don't have edge states. You don't necessarily have edge states, basically. Yeah. So parity, so here we only consider unsaid symmetry, we didn't consider space group, but the space group can also add to here, and then the consideration is slightly different.
Could you design a version of
heat
field matches in two dimensions using this?
I don't know. we tried to discuss this yesterday, but I think we may even have a counterexample, like chiral spin states. Chiral spin states, if you believe they exist, that means SO3 is realized projectively but have a gap. But on the other hand, you know, when I'm writing paper on chiral spin states, referee always point out, you know, after 15 years of intensive search, we still haven't found it. So maybe that can be a proof that chiral spin states do not exist. Yeah.
Last question, because everybody is getting hungry.
Yeah.
He's in
the fray. Actually, they're recording.
Last question or comment, please. No,
let's thank
you.